plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your real ID at tsa.gov/real ID. That's tsa.gov/real ID. Or visit your local DMV. And then you'll be cleared for takeoff.
Sure beats the view from my old house.
There's a bar at the end of the street. When the owner pulled the curtains, only the regulars were allowed to stay. Artists, musicians, students. I was in one.
What's that mean?
Reinventing the world. I thought we could make it better. Never imagining how bad it would get.
At least you thought about it.
Didn't you?
I didn't do much thinking back then.
Really? You seem like someone who's always thinking.
Yeah. And then things happen. Things that change it, you know.
Maybe we're the same that way. Broken until the world ended.
Bonjour, Zheads. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And je m'appelle Lucy.
This is the Cast of Us, episode 540.
And this episode, we're covering The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon, season 1, episode 3, Paris toujours sera Paris.
Vraiment, true, true. How are you? Ça va?
Bien, et tu?
good. So, Daryl Dixon, season 1, episode 3, Paris toujours sera Paris. What do you think?
Oh, I want to go on holiday to Paris immediately. I spent most of this episode being like, why is Paris so freaking cool? I really liked it. There were some bits I liked more than others, but generally I really enjoyed it. How about you?
Me too. I think they did a really good job of incorporating what's special about Paris into a zombie apocalypse show, which is quite a feat.
Yeah.
I at first thought, oh, maybe this is a little silly, but on second watch, I didn't think that at all. I thought about it more and I just loved it. Mm-hmm. And you'll hear why when I talk about my points, but I think it's a really, really good episode. I loved it.
Excellent. Well, I'm excited to talk about it.
Okay. You go first.
All right. How about that cold open? What instrument did you play in orchestra? Were you in orchestra? You were in a band.
I was in marching band and symphonic band, which is, I guess, like orchestra. I played clarinet and some saxophone later on. And when I was in marching band, I played snare drum and bass drum.
Hang on. You played the saxophone?
Well, badly.
So did I. Also badly. Wow.
See, I played clarinet for 2 years and then I was like, I want to try saxophone. And my band director said, no, we need you in clarinet. Mm-hmm. And I said, I talked him into it. I'm like, you know, I'm really excited about the saxophone. And so I think I might actually do a better job and practice more. And he goes, okay. And then I didn't practice more and I was horrible and I felt bad. But anyway, marching band was like the highlight of my high school.
Yeah, you had good fun there, right?
We would do competitions around the country and our football team won 4 games the whole 4 years I was in high school. But our marching band was like the stars of the school. Even still, we weren't quite as high in status as the football team because that's how teenagers are. But
and so was, did you feel really like great. Emotional seeing a band depicted so realistically on screen?
It was really dumb.
It was quite dumb, wasn't it? Yeah. I've just written, I like the trombones the best. I think they shoved the trombones down the throats of the Zeds and I was just like,
yeah, it was pretty creative.
Why the fuck not? It was so dumb.
I like the hanging Zed head next harp. To the harp.
Yes, that was very and crafty.
The one zombie that would actually, because they were just not making music at all. They were making noise. But I like that the zombie that was tied to the drums would just hit the hi-hat every once in a while.
Yeah.
Like he was kind of getting into it.
I think what I liked most about this is I think it was quite self-aware, because at the end Daryl's like, well, that was a stupid detour. And I was like,
Yes. He's like, all right, we're out of here. That was a bad idea. Let's go to Paris. And yeah. I kind of felt like, well, it felt like Princess. Mm-hmm. Did you think about? Because yes. It's someone, this guy who's their contact doesn't seem to have seen anyone in a long time. He's like, no. Are you friends? Are you living? And when they first got there. So maybe he's like her. He just got so lonely and bored that he made this. But it also felt a bit like something that would come out of Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, a little bit, right.
And then what I loved about it is then Daryl's like, I mean, if it was on Fear, it would have taken the whole episode.
Mm-hmm.
They would spend the whole time with this guy. And Daryl, as soon as he sees it, he's like, nope, we're out of here. And I was like, is this a commentary on Fear? Like, no, we're not doing that.
I just loved how he and Isabel, like, they were so expressionless. They were neither horrified nor amused. They were just like,
oh, crap.
Okay. Yes, we're going then. Some fun fact about that scene. Did you understand the reference to Where is Brian? He is in the kitchen.
No.
No, me neither. But it came up in one of the reviews I looked at. And apparently, if you learn English at high school in France in a certain era, that is one of the phrases you will learn. It's even got its own Wikipedia entry on French Wikipedia. Hmm. And it comes from a school textbook called Speak English for Children in the First Year of Secondary School. So I quite like that. It made me remember the kind of shit phrases that you don't actually need or use that you learn at high school.
So many. Well, the woman who wrote it is Colleen Hebert, who's bilingual French English writer.
Amazing.
And she wrote for The Returned, that sort
of cool
zombie-esque series from France a few years back.
I did.
So she knows.
I think it was very dumb, but I enjoyed it. Like, that's the thing. Yeah, it was so dumb. I just enjoyed
it. If it had lasted the whole episode, I would not have enjoyed it.
Yeah, if it was the culmination of the episode was like arriving in the demi-monde and that was what was there, I would be like, are you kidding?
On second watch, I think that was the point, because what he's saying, this guy, he's saying, see, music, culture, it's still alive.
Yeah.
And it's so sad and it's so untrue. Like, no, dude, this is sad and it's awful. And so it feels like you're wrong. Culture's dead. Music is dead. And then when we get to the demi-monde, it's like, oh, no. It's alive. You just needed to go to Paris. But so I think it was a good juxtaposition where it's kind of like, nah, this is pointless. It's not working. And then it's like, oh, wait, no, the spirit, like, toujours Paris, toujours sera Paris, Paris will always be Paris. It's like, it is the spirit of art and culture is alive in Paris. And it was a good, so there was a point to it, even though some people I saw thought it seemed kind of pointless.
And the very Daryl shoots zombie in head and goes, we're going to Paris. I was like, I want I want all my vacations to be announced like that in future. Just someone shoot a zombie in the head and go, we're going to this place.
Yeah. And because it looked like those zombies coming outside with Sylvie, because the whole orchestra, because zombies are drawn to sound, so it drew some in and it looked like Sylvie and Laurent weren't going to be in trouble, and then Daryl just comes out and shoots one. I'm like, let's go, come on.
He shuts it down. He shuts that shit right down. And it made for a very enjoyable opening, I thought. I didn't want to think about it too much and the logistics of how he got the zombies in those positions, but whatever. Yeah. Cool visual. I'm sure Greg Nicotero had a great time.
I mean, if we're okay with Princess, we kind of have to be okay with this, in my opinion.
I mean, these zombies were
she did the same thing.
Maybe this is what the variants will be, orchestral zombies.
Yeah, they're trying to train them to carry on with humanity.
I would love that, to keep culture going.
Wasn't there at least one where they were smart, and I think it was actually in Fear, where they had him on some kind of a treadmill or something, pushing something around?
I believe that to be correct, it was at the oil refinery.
I mean, they're perpetual motion machines, so you
could
as well
definitely get a good drum player out of that, I reckon.
Okay, well, I'm gonna talk about culture and art, because I think that's
beautiful
at the core of this.
Yeah.
And Paris, toujours sera Paris, Paris is always artsy and cool, even in the zombie apocalypse. And that seems sort of maybe trite, but on second watch, I really felt the depth of that sentiment. Like, I think Norman Reedus fucking loved this episode.
Yeah. Because
I think he's into art, right? He's an artist. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to showcase what's special about Paris on a surface level, but on a spiritual level too.
Yeah.
And the conversation between Daryl and Isabel in her apartment, I just loved. She says, there was a bar at the end of the street. When the owner pulled the curtains, only the regulars were allowed to stay. Artists, musicians, students. And she said something in French. And he goes, what's that mean? And she goes, reinventing the world. And I think that's sort of like what this kind of counterculture can be like.
Yeah.
Like, counterculture is about doing things where there's not really a template necessarily.
Yeah.
You're ignoring regular culture and you're doing like unfettered self-expression.
Yes.
And so that means that you can't really go through the motions of it because there are no prescribed motions. So whatever you're doing is more in the moment and real and alive, you know. Yeah. At least that's my romanticized vision. It reminded me of Burning Man, this place. And so it was really special to see that kind of a thing. Like, whenever there's culture and art like that, or self-expression, music, glittery outfits, it's kind of a celebration. It's a hopeful thing to do. It just had a really good feeling to it. Even like going to Jim Morrison's grave and seeing there's still, because if you go to Jim Morrison's grave in Père Lachaise, the cemetery, you'll see a lot of roses there and booze and other things. And that's still happening even in the zombie apocalypse. It's just this feeling of, look, all the specialness in the world is, it hasn't been stamped out by this whole thing.
Yeah.
And so when Falou, this guy that they first meet,
loved him. He was great.
Yeah. They take him to the Demi-Monde, and they have to go through the catacombs first, this underground passages lined with skulls and bones. It's very grim. And Daryl says, where are we? And Falou says, the catacombs, brother, among the remains of the 6 million who died in La Peste Noire, the Black Death. And America is an infant, but here we survived many apocalypses. We will survive this one too. So going through this grim area of death that leads to this delightful club as he's delivering this dialogue is perfect, because it's a metaphor for the whole thing. It's overcoming and persevering and then letting the spirit shine through.
Yeah.
And so then seeing the club, well, I've been talking a lot. What do you have something to say about this club in particular?
For context, I'm sitting drinking some white wine in honor of Paris. It's actually Portuguese wine, so like, sorry, Paris, but it's still quite good. I have a whole thing about the club because I think it's really interesting. So when I was reading, Vulture is covering Daryl Dixon this season, which is nice. I really like Vulture's TV reviews.
Me too.
And I was reading Leah Marilla Thomas's review of this. And she was really taken, I think, with the Demi-Monde. And she said something that really stood out to me, and people who've listened to the podcast for a long time will kind of know why. She says, this is the first time really that we've seen Daryl in an urban space outside of a noisy apartment building at the Commonwealth that was still painfully local, or around a subculture that doesn't involve skin or skin suits or eating people. It's definitely the first time we've seen him in a queer space. I thought I saw a smile twitch and his shoulders relax, but it was too brief to gather any kind of meaningful analysis. And I think a lot of what you're saying about fringe society ties in a lot with queerness as well. And this was like the most openly creative and queer space we've ever seen in The Walking Dead. Like, we've had loads of good LGBTQ characters and kind of across the shows, which has been really nice, but we've never seen a kind of fully fringe environment like this. And particularly trans and non-binary performers, like, they're drag queens. That was amazing.
And what I'm saying about counterculture, how it's like all about not prescribing to any set thing, but it's more about just whatever's inside you, let that come out. It's self-expression.
Yeah.
It's, and in whatever form that takes is okay. That really lends itself well to drag and queer, because if that's what you are, then this is the kind of space where you can feel free to let that show and celebrate it with pride, you know?
Definitely. And Demi-Monde literally means a group. Well, there's one meaning that's to do with like skanky women. But the other one, the other meaning that I like is that it's a group of people on the fringes of respectable society. It literally means the half world. And the original understanding of demi-monde, I think, came from a book by Alexandre Dumas, who I don't think is buried in Père Lachaise, but he is buried in Paris. And it's about sex work and how that threatens marriage and how it kind of takes down society that way. And I think demi-monde as a group of people who don't adhere to the norm and absorb this kind of counterculture is just really cool. I loved it. I thought it was great. And what you said about having to go through the catacombs to get there, I hadn't really thought of it that way. That scene stood out to me for what he said about America is an infant, but that idea of having to go through the death to get to the birth,
the life,
is so cool. And it ties in with what Isabel says to Daryl about we were broken until the world ended, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. That theme that the apocalypse brought out the best in Daryl, I think is a big thing with that character, you know.
And I don't think, I'm not getting on my bandwagon of, by the way, Daryl's totally a gay man, because I don't think that's the case. But
I
think it's interesting that he's always been coded quite asexual / queer. Like, he just has, he just,
not always.
Just how he's been written, you know?
And obviously, a lot of time, but not always.
Not all the time. Towards the end, they leaned into him having relationships with some woman whose name I don't remember, who definitely wasn't a terrible person.
Traitorous dog.
Yeah, traitorous dog women. But I thought it was nice to see him, because one of the things I've liked about Daryl is you can do fish out of water with him, but he's very accepting of difference in terms of, like, I always remember when he went for dinner with Eric and Aaron. You know, you'd expect him, someone like Daryl, I guess, to be quite narrow-minded, but actually he's very...
Even throw out some slurs, possibly.
Yeah, exactly. When you met Merle, right? Like, there's not much.
And I think Daryl actually, that's probably what the writers had in mind when he first came on the scene, you know, maybe. But he's changed now. And there is a part of me that's like, all right, you had to make your character who was more representative of the kind of flaws that we see in the real world, but you wanted him to be the coolest person ever possible. Fine.
Yeah.
That's what he is now, though.
But there's also, I guess, an argument, isn't there, that he would never have been able to, that there's freedom in the apocalypse of, like, he could never have behaved like that with Merle around.
Yeah. They even talk about it in this episode where she's saying, he said, I never thought much back then. And she said, you seem to be thinking all the time now. And he said something about having changed. So they're aware that he's different.
Absolutely. And I sent you an item for news about this as well, about Paloma, who we see in the
I have
scene.
It already.
So we can talk about that later. But I thought it was great. I thought it was arty. I'm always, with scenes like that, I'm always like, are we going to go full Cantina Band or is it going to be cool? And I think it was cool. I think it was cool.
Yeah, so easy for that to just seem like not something that would really exist, or something staged that felt staged. And I've been in spaces kind of like this. It really reminded me of Burning Man, with all the art and music and ultra cool space and colorful characters and imaginative outfits. The glittery woman spinning in a hanging ring. I think I've met her, you know, I don't know. But people in feathers and drag and booze and drugs, of course. And also even being a bit apocalyptic, like Burning Man feels very apocalyptic.
Yeah.
So I felt like, I want to go to this club.
And I think the other cultural thing I liked was when they went to Père Lachaise, the cemetery. I loved the French version of People Are Strange. But I liked that even Daryl, inverted commas, like, he was impressed by Jim Morrison's grave. And I was like, oh my God, is Daryl Jim Morrison? Is he the rock star? And I said, I quite liked how they're like, oh, he's an American rock star who came and died in Paris. And then Laurent is like, Monsieur Daryl, you will not die in Paris. And I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. I just like that line. I mean, Laurent is possibly full of shit.
Well, that was a bit prophetic sounding.
Yeah. I mean, I did. One Messiah. Of the things that bugged me about this episode that I thought was really funny was, like, the breadcrumbing of him going to the Eiffel Tower. He's like, if only I could see the Eiffel Tower. I'm like, you've seen it 5 times today, just from a distance, kid. And he's like, no, I want to go near it. And at the end, when he disappears, I'm like, I wonder where he's gone.
Right. That's true. Yeah. But what I loved about that is it sounded very poetic and romantic, you know, what it must be like to stand under the Eiffel Tower and look up and see the sky.
Yeah.
And Daryl's like, so how about that radio?
Yeah. He's like, it took 2 million rivets to make this. And Daryl's like, yeah, don't care. Fuck the pigeons. Where's the radio? Like, it's so funny. But yeah, I was like, they're really breadcrumbing this quite heavily that he's going to go to the Eiffel Tower. And I'm like, you know what? Fine. But yeah, I really, yeah, the whole cultural side of it in this episode was off the scale. And I thought the demimonde was just amazing. And I was very pleased that it was not the demimonde that got wrecked because people were looking for Daryl. It was the rooftop settlement. I knew one of them was going to get wrecked. And I was like, oh, please don't be the nice, safe, queer space.
Yeah. And it couldn't be because the whole point was Paris will always be Paris. And this was like a seed of loveliness or, mm-hmm. you know, of life and spirit. And I'm glad they didn't crush that because was kind of the point, right? It's still here. Ah, crush it.
Yeah, so they exactly.
And another aspect of this, it's a little bit of a stretch, but just celebrating everything that is special about Paris and how it relates to art, music, and culture. Well, there also has to be romance because it's Paris. And so I just want to say a little bit about Sylvie and Emile flirting.
His little boyfriend. Yeah. Not on the run.
He sees her and he's like, or they're talking, and so did you always want to be a nun? And she goes, I never imagined anything else. And he goes, well, you never came to Paris. It's a good place to imagine, which he's basically saying, trying to talk her out of being a nun.
I mean, he is so obviously going to die soon, but I love him. His the line where he's like, my grandmother was an Argentinian refugee. She taught me to dance and to fight for freedom. I was like,
And then he twirls like... her. Yeah. So that was lovely, right? That could also have not felt real, but this show is good at taking some of the, we've seen sort of similar kinds of things in The Walking Dead, but they just feel like we're watching a stage play or something. Like it's not something that we can really feel it. But this show is good at letting you actually feel like, oh man, this space is so cool and this mm-hmm. music is great. And you know, we're like Laurent, who's just, or at least I was, like staring on it and kind of, you know, just taking it all in and transfixed by it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Same thing with this little romantic exchange between these two. I really believed it.
Oh, I was thinking about, do you remember when we covered Anna and the Apocalypse and there was that little, the like music theater kids that really love each other? I'm like, oh my God, I hope the story differs. Like, I don't want to spoil Anna and the Apocalypse, but they reminded me of those two. I also thought I'm just having a look at my notes here, the Monet having the water lilies from Musée d'Orsay there. I was like, that's cool. Because often in Apocalypse dramas, the joke is like, it's worthless. So like, I'm thinking about Last Man on Earth with Will Forte, like he's got the Declaration of Independence and I think he's using it as toilet roll. Like, you know, there's this joke of like, well, it's worth nothing, because that's kind of true. But I also love that I think Isabel says they saved it. That's something. Like there's this recognition.
The point
that, like,
is this stuff is worth something.
Yeah.
In this episode, yeah, this art is worth something. And yeah, it's a Claude Monet painting of water lilies, which he did many of, and they just got it right there.
The Musée d'Orsay is amazing. I think is it the Modern Art Museum? I can never remember what it's specifically for, but it's in an old, I want to say train station. I might be wrong.
Yeah.
I've been to it one time in my life, but it was amazing.
It's been a while.
it's fantastic. It is the former Orsay railway station. I'm not making it up. There you go.
I wonder if they considered having the Mona Lisa.
But so overrated. So overrated.
It really is, yeah. Daryl was like, oh, it reminds me of home. And I'm like, okay, he's doing like that art appreciation thing where you stare at a painting and feel something.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, like at home we have water.
when Merle and I used to walk amongst the water lilies.
And shoot the frogs. One time when I was collecting ears for my necklace, I saw a frog. And you're like, great story, Daryl. That's awesome. You really get it.
All right. Let's move on. Do you want to go next or should I go?
I've kind of covered. I think I've spoken to everything that you mentioned there. The only other thing was, I love the idea of surviving many apocalypses and the peste noire, the black death being mm-hmm. just one of them.
That's like the bubonic plague, is that
yes.
what that is?
Yeah,
about?
And it yeah. was a big problem throughout Europe for a period of about 200 years. Right. It would come and go. And one of the manuscripts I work on, well, the main manuscript I work on, is actually a compilation that was done when the plague hit Edinburgh one of the times. Not the worst
is
time,
it
but
the
one of the
Decameron?
Times. No, but it's very like the Decameron. And yeah, it's everyone in Edinburgh got locked down and isolated, and that was in the 1560s. Mm. So it was wow. a rolling thing. It was like rolling lockdowns and rolling black plague. But I think Paris had it very badly. I think they lost a lot.
Hence
of
the
population.
Catacombs.
Yeah, I really
like they ran out of cemetery space.
I really want to read about the locations that they met, because that was definitely Père Lachaise. Like that, yeah. I do think they maybe blew all their budget on getting into those places, though, because some of the CGI is a bit ropey and some of the blue screen. I'm like, but is it worth it to have Père Lachaise in the catacombs? Probably. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, sure. you go ahead. Absolutely.
Okay. So this kind of flows into my next point, which is map stuff / travel logistics / tourist attractions.
Yeah.
So we were talking about Daryl saying he was looking for a radio, and I'm like, isn't he looking for a ship? And just piecing it all together, it sounds like he's just looking for any way to try to get information about whether there's a ship that can go to America. Mm-hmm. And also we were talking about why they took another route instead of going through Paris. And
yes.
Daryl said, Paris, that's a straight shot. And Isabel said, Angers will be safer. There's a man there with a radio. He can connect us to our people in the north. I'm not sure why they don't just go to Le Havre, where the port is. Mm-hmm. But anyway, point is that Isabel didn't want to go through Paris because she's got bad memories there. And also, she's probably right. Any city you would think would probably be good to be avoided in mm-hmm. the zombie apocalypse, you would think.
I wondered if Jenny holds Le Havre, so that they would need,
right?
They would
need
to
some help
get there in illicit means, but it's stretching it.
Yeah, I mean, it does make
you
sense.
Have to kind
like,
of reason it out
don't
that
just
way.
You're go like, there and think that you're going to see a ship and be like, "Can you take me to America?" Maybe you need some help with that.
It's not an American tale. He's not Fievel. Like,
but it seems like he got over there, kind of close to how Fievel.
Very
did.
Little bother.
But if you look at a map of Paris, you can see the route they ended up taking was pretty zigzaggy. Mm-hmm. They start in Marseille in the south coast of France, mm-hmm. went to Angers with the zombie orchestra, which is about 530 miles or 850 kilometers to the northwest. Mm-hmm. And then Angers to Paris is about 185 miles or 300 kilometers like northeast from there. But Paris would have been more direct, as Daryl said. Marseille directly to Paris is only 480 miles. So they went about 235 miles or 380 kilometers out of the way to see the zombie orchestra.
And the reviews were not good.
Not so good, but you got to try. And then, by the way, once they get up to Paris, they're only 125 miles or 200 kilometers from Le Havre. So they're like 85% of the way there already.
Yeah.
So it's not like they have a whole bunch more ground to cover in the next three episodes. We're halfway through, by the way.
I know. How mad is that? I'm guessing they're going to be in Paris for at least another episode or two.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah,
it would be a shame if they just dipped in and out.
Mm-hmm. And then also I was thinking, this is nitpicky, but I've been to Paris like three times, and coming up from the south, I thought maybe it wasn't realistic that they just passed through Père Lachaise, because it's kind of to the northeast, more to the east edge of Paris. And I was thinking the catacombs, which I've been to, it's not really that close to that. But then again, I looked it up and there's like a mile of catacombs open to the public for tours, but there are as many as 300 to 500 kilometers of catacombs under Paris that mm-hmm. people aren't allowed to go to, but in the zombie apocalypse you can. So maybe there's one right next to Père Lachaise. I don't know.
I mean, they
must
be
huge. They kind of skipped all over the city, you know.
I mean, they walked past Pantheon at one point.
Yeah.
And that's
like 5 miles away.
Yeah, that's like, I went there for a conference once and it's like near the left bank, maybe. Paris is I cannot emphasize enough. Paris is huge. Like, Paris is like almost as big as London, I think. Like, it's enormous.
Yeah. But if they're going to travel that many miles, they might as well see the sights.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I guess it's part of Daryl not like, well, I'm here, you know? Like, yeah.
I mean, they made it like they naturally would have just passed through Père Lachaise, but I think they're like, forget logistics. We want to look. I mean, like, if you're going to show sights of Paris in a zombie apocalypse show, the catacombs and Père Lachaise are perfect because they're both really grim and also beautiful, you know, I think. The catacombs are gorgeous in a really macabre way.
I think the only way they kind of justify Père Lachaise is that it's where Fallu is based, but even then it's like,
that's where they meet him. Yeah, yeah. That's where they were. Maybe that was their destination. Yeah, that is an excellent point.
Yeah.
I'm dumb. You're right. But so I just wanted to say a little bit about the catacombs. They're underground ossuaries, which is like the final resting place for bones of the dead, built in the late 1700s as part of the effort to eliminate the city's overflowing cemeteries, in large part because of the Black Plague, I think. Mm-hmm. Mostly they were forgotten about until the early 19th century when people started holding concerts and private events there for the novelty of it. And so I guess that was based on truth. Like, people thought, oh, that's cool. Let's have parties in the catacombs.
Yeah.
They did it in this episode. And then Père Lachaise is a cemetery where Jim Morrison's grave is. And that's why they played the French version of People Are Strange, because that's a Doors song, People Are Strange, if you guys didn't know that. I wonder how many people listening don't know this stuff. I always assume people know everything I know, but I don't think that's
true. No, I think it's
true.
Good to go over it, though.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was thinking, would Daryl actually be a Morrison fan? I think it's plausible, but I feel like he would more like death metal or something, or I don't know.
I think you'd know who Jim Morrison was. I don't know if he would be a fan, but it's a bit of a cultural
thing. Yeah, that's true.
Thing. Good point. Like, I knew, like, neither of my parents are Doors fans, but I always knew that, like, it's also quite a mythology around Jim Morrison being buried in Paris. I think it's one of the big things that you know. But yeah, I know what you mean. I am like, would that be Daryl's first choice of music?
But I could see Norman Reedus
totally
being a fan. And, it's the largest cemetery in Paris, 144 acres or 44 hectares, and lots of famous people are buried there. Frédéric Chopin is the grave that I most wanted to see outside of Jim Morrison. Also, Proust, the novelist Marcel Proust, the mime Marcel Marceau, playwright Oscar Wilde, writer Gertrude Stein, among others. And if you get a chance to go to Paris, I would definitely, especially this audience, go there. It's so beautiful. I spent hours walking through it. It's like a maze. And I was there when I was at Walker Stalker Con doing Walking Dead panels. So this feels like
you went off kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I think the first time I met you, you were off to Paris like the next day or something after Walker Stalker. Can we do Walker Stalker Paris if it ever came back? Can we do like ZHeadCon
Paris?
Paris
is too cool for that.
I know. They throw a site.
I don't think so, guys.
Oh, damn.
No, I don't know. Maybe not. And then the last thing, just seeing the decay of the city is morbidly beautiful. The military helicopter crashed into the top of the Eiffel Tower, so the tip is gone. I bet you we'll see a close up of that next time, like you said. And the Pantheon monument, like you said, which looks like a Capitol building. But I noticed the big cloth sign hanging off of it that says Fuyez, which means run away.
I wanted to look up. I didn't get a chance to. I wanted to look up if Quinn's office was, if the Demi-Monde and Quinn's office was a specific place, because he gives a bit of history to it about Vichy France, and it sounded really interesting, but also plausible that you could just say that about any old building in France at that time. Yeah, it's great. It's just such a feast for the eyes. And just really, like I said, really makes me want to go on vacation.
Right. And I know, I mean, you'll hear this when we do listener feedback next time, but we have, I think Tiffane is like, yeah, I'm from France. I don't have the same feelings that you guys do about all this stuff because I've seen it a lot. So,
well, I get the same thing. Like, a lot of films now, the two places they tend to film are Vancouver and Glasgow, both of which I know quite well. So, like, I'll be sitting watching, like, I don't know, the new Batman film with Robert Pattinson, and I'm like, that's Glasgow. Just like, that's a square in Glasgow. I've been there. That's a nightclub. Right. Like, so it is quite yeah. strange when you're watching something that you like know.
But yeah, for me, I have a different feeling. Like when I see things set in San Francisco where I live, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, cool. I still think it's cool. It's not like beautiful. It's not the same kind of feeling, but yeah.
No. Yeah. It's always like, it's interesting. I think I find it harder to suspend disbelief when it's supposed to be somewhere else. I'm like,
that's a good point. Yeah, for sure. Like, watching the Last of Us. And I love the game set in Boston because Boston's one of my favorite cities. I lived there for a couple of years. And I was like, I don't recognize these buildings.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a part that and then I found out it was filmed somewhere else.
I'm like, that's Edmonton, which is like a prairie city in Alberta.
All right. What's next?
We spent a little bit of time with Janae. Is the woman Janae, or does she work for the organization Janae?
She's Janae.
Okay.
Yeah. And we don't know. I thought it's probably her last name, but it's all we know.
Amazing French smoking roll-up cigarette. I mean, they really leaned into it. Cool. I liked the scene that she had with Caudron. As she was walking in, Peter went, I didn't understand what he was saying. He went, this is three circles, right? And I was like, what? So he was talking about something like really like storytelling-y and like abstract. And he's like, no, this is like the three circles, CRM. People. And I'm like, oh, the CRM. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's what it's called. We don't know that yet.
No, I think this is like a French CRM, but the world's too divided to, I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, I was a bit like,
This is pouvoir du vivant.
Pouvoir du vivant.
Which
power
is,
to the living.
Yeah, that's the name of this organization. Pouvoir du vivant.
I think the house is called Mother's House, Maison Mère.
Well, I looked that up, and apparently that just means headquarters. But seems like
that's cool.
A double meaning because I like that. She's the woman running it.
The nuns being bonsoir as well. I like that. Right. So we hear a little bit about Caudron. He was recruited into the cause by someone who probably goes around France recruiting people like Caudron. His face tattoo is part of that recruitment, so it wasn't
which I didn't
a fashion
realize
choice.
Before. Yeah, and I guess
how come
it's
no
that
one
symbol.
Else has one?
Do they not? I guess not. But when you watch the opening sequence, which I'll talk a little bit more about later, but when you see those Da Vinci-esque drawings, you see that symbol on there too. So that's a pouvoir du vivant.
I enjoyed the phrase, the American made me a liar. Like, he's just sad that his brother is dead.
And I thought, like, he promised his parents that he would look after his brother, and that sort of connects him with Isabel, who promised that her sister that she would look after Laurent.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I loved the guy they cast as the mad scientist. He looked like a little cartoon drawing of a scientist from the 1950s, like with his,
with his
gray hair and his like crazy eyes.
And his lab jacket.
What were they doing to that Zed? Like, what were they trying to do? So the clues we get are, they say 18 seconds, and that's assuming the amount of time it took them from whatever they were doing for the Zed to smoosh itself on the window. It seemed to be going quicker. It seemed to be more aggressive. It looked to me like its head might have exploded a bit.
Yes, I think so. I don't think that was just slamming his head against the window. I think it
like
kind of exploded in bits, like blood zits or something.
So are they trying to find a way to mass kill all the Zeds? Are they trying to find a way to make them more powerful? Like, I'm intrigued, I'm not going to lie, but I would have liked a bit more to chew on.
I think that's, well, I think that's right where they want us.
Mm-hmm.
To be like, what is going on here?
Imagine if they were the good guys all along. They're like, oh, we're just doing this so we can help everyone. And it's like, oh, okay.
I think they think they are the good guys. I don't know. Well, I have a whole point on this group. Should I just
go for it?
Okay. So it's pouvoir du vivant, or power of the living. They're a French paramilitary organization led by Janae. Isabel says it's a movement that started after the outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
When they're talking about the sign. They recruited survivors. They seemingly control a lot of France because Quinn says they're allowing him to use this space in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And also Isabel says they're based in Paris, but they've got guys all the way down in Marseille, mm-hmm. you know, and up in the port in the north too. So it seems like they kind of control all of France. They experiment on or with Zeds. When Codon is telling his story about how he was recruited into this, and he hasn't even met Genet yet, but now he's devoted himself to her cause. Feels like a bit of a cult of personality kind of thing. What did Isabel say that in
people
times
drawn
of
to power, no
desperation, people are drawn to order or something. Daryl said, and also God. And I'm like, zing.
Yep.
Codron said that the person recruiting him said they would make the world right again. So I'm like, yeah, what does that mean? Like impose order on the world, like the Empire in Star Wars or what? Because it's all a paramilitary, you know, it's very organized and top down kind of thing. He plays Daryl's audio tape for her. I'm like, wow, that audio tape turning out to be a bad idea.
Never do an audio journal.
Yeah, that's the lesson for today, kids, as we podcast our 12,000th
our lives
hour
to the world.
So the experimentation part. So the zombies chained to a lab, scientists take notes, you hear machines beeping like they're taking measurements or something. It starts twitching. It ripped a chain from the wall. So I think that shows it's exceptionally strong, and then its head seemed to explode. And I think she was checking on the progress to see how, I think what I take is they did something to this zombie to make it stronger, but whatever they did also made its head explode in 18 seconds, and they're trying to make it not explode. That's my take on it.
Yeah.
If you look at the intro sequence, that shot of this textbook open to this page featuring this Da Vinci-esque diagram, I think it's of a zombie now. And there's a bunch of notes. And one says, controle la mort, or control the dead.
Huh.
And there's a note that says Uber, which is like Super Zed, right?
No, it's actually a lift share company.
Oh, right. They're trying to program the zombies to take people around on their backs or pull carts or something. There's also some French saying something like in that notebook, if we know how to something the heart, it will spread more quickly. I don't really know what that means, but it's, as we mentioned in World Beyond, another Walking Dead spinoff, there was an indication that the zombie apocalypse started because of something going on in French labs. And then they somehow made it worse, maybe by creating more dangerous or powerful variants. So maybe Genet and her scientists started the zombie apocalypse, but I don't think so, because their group formed afterwards. So maybe they stole the zombie research and now they're using it for own purposes. Whatever they're doing, it seems like they're trying to make Uber Zeds and they want to use them to make the world right again. And I'm like, dude, if you can recruit soldiers, maybe you should just use them. It seems a bit silly, and maybe that's because I don't have it exactly right what the hell's going on, but I'm curious.
Because in World Beyond, they're trying to find out more about the Zeds themselves. As far as we know, we don't know that they're trying to weaponize them per se.
Yeah, I got them. The sense they're trying to like find a cure and figure out how to neutralize them, right? And then this guy comes in with a gun and he's mad, saying, you started this and then you made it worse. And there was an article that suggested maybe that guy was from Pouvoir du Vivant, but then I'm like, if he's mad at them, and then maybe, I don't know. I don't really know how it all connects. But I feel like we're not really, well, maybe this is me trying to make myself not seem so dumb, but I feel like we're not really supposed to know right now. But if listeners have more of an idea, I would love to know your theories. This is a thing where you can send in theories about.
Definitely. It leads quite nicely into my point, because I was going to talk a little about going back to Isabel's apartment, and the end of that is, I think, variant Zeds, because they get up quicker after they've smooshed. They move quicker. They're herky-jerky, but they move more like...
Love it! Speedier.
Herky-jerky! I picked that up from you. I said it the other day in, like, organic conversation. I was like, herky-jerky? Where did I get that from? But they were herky-jerky. And some, one of them had...
loved it.
Boiler... What did they call them? Burner. Burner blood.
Yeah.
I was a bit confused as to why Isabel was being so flippin' useless. She was just standing there like...
horrified. Well, I don't know if she's had much practice.
That's true.
She's just been in the abbey, not having to deal with them. I don't know.
Fair. She has been cloistered. this is going to be a weird thing to say, but how cute was that little girl zombie? I thought she was really sweet.
I know. It was sad, though.
It was so sad.
Especially at the end when she looked back, Isabel, and the little zombie's like reaching out, but almost like, don't leave me again.
And she'd been there so long that like vines had grown over her. It was just so sad, but she was such a cute... I don't know. They did a really good job of humanizing her. Like, I don't know. There was just something about her where I was like, oh.
Yeah,
she's really,
I thought,
adorable and sad.
When the zombies started falling out the windows, it reminded me of Dead City.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, that's a urban hazard, apparently. You make noise in a city in the ZA, you get rating Zs. And yeah, then when they came up fast and they looked, I always say this, but I thought they looked really good, the zombies in this episode, for the most part, and the way they moved. And I just loved that whole sequence.
It was cool, the courtyard. And cool. I loved the natural world creeping back. So like the ivy has grown over the doors, and that's what the problem is to get out. It's not something man-made and strange. It's like the city regrowing almost. I just thought that was really cool.
And Daryl thought really fast and used the acid to take out the ivy. I don't know if he stabbed the zombie through the chest so as not to kill it, so then he could rub it against the ivy, but maybe he could have still killed it. And also, I don't know, maybe he needed it to kind of help him. I don't know.
There was like sort of a kebab maneuver going on.
But he thought fast and it was clever.
Yeah. And I loved seeing Isabel's apartment again, to revisit it and see, you know, people have squatted there. There's clearly been a lot of people who've passed through it. Isabel and Daryl get great dialogue. Like they get quite barbed/funny exchanges. I loved "I wasn't always a nun." Yeah, I can see that. I liked "Beats the view from my old house," because I think what we're seeing is the Sacré-Cœur, which is the church in Montmartre. By the way, Isabel must have been doing quite well with her thieving to live that near to Montmartre, but good for her. And also when he says that she upgraded with God from her terrible boyfriend. I am satisfied that Quinn was her boyfriend. I put that dude to bed.
Picture thing where they sat in the photo with probably boyfriend and drug dealer.
And fucking called it that he was the father of the child. Like, oh my God, imagine you find out your child in the apocalypse is freaking Laurent. Like, I can do a Olympics cube in 3 seconds. It's like, oh. there was a joke about the noisy neighbors, the neighbor on the balconies. I liked something that they did in The Walking Dead in one of my favorite episodes, Clear, is that Carl wanted to get a picture of Laurie to show Judith when she grew up. And I like that Isabel thought it was important to get a picture of Lily. It does make me wonder if Laurent does actually know that Isabel is his aunt, because we assumed it was a secret, but she's open about the fact she knew his mum.
Well, she had a whole story about his parents.
I'm still unclear about whether or not he knows that Isabel is his aunt.
I feel like not, just because a big part of that whole story is they just lie to this poor kid.
Yeah, they just tell him all sorts of shit and he's like, okay. Hidden goodies in the fireplace, watches, drugs, jewelry, all of which could still be valuable in the apocalypse. I don't know, the drugs maybe.
I'm pretty sure the drugs would be totally potentless.
I did
12
wonder.
Years later. I looked up cocaine and it says after 2 years it loses its potency and it's not even considered like an illicit substance anymore.
Oh man.
But I don't know about whatever else was in there.
Don't tell the lads at the Demimond.
I know, right? Oh, look at this.
And there was a sweet moment with them talking about reinventing the world and being someone who was always thinking. And I liked the way that it highlighted how different Daryl's path has been, because Daryl would never have hung out with intellectuals at a cafe debating politics and science and the end of the world, but somehow he is, and rightly so, like one of the ultimate survivors of it. And he sees himself as not a thinker, and Isabel's like, no, I think you're someone who was always thinking. And I think she's probably right. I think he is someone who thinks and observes and feels quite deeply, and though he is impulsive at times. Generally I just really liked that sequence, and I liked that Isabel got a new jumper/sweater from the
wardrobe.
You'll
see if any clothes are still left.
I mean, why not?
I like that whole thing at the apartment. I'm glad they went back there. It made me realize why they showed the girl in the first place. I should have known that she was gonna be a zombie eventually. I particularly liked the dialogue between them, some of which I quoted before about, you know, art and music and stuff and the bar that only let the regulars in. But then the part you just mentioned where about thinking, and you seem like someone who's always thinking, and he says, no, I don't know. Things happen, things that change you, you know? And she said, maybe we're the same that way, broken until the world ended. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like this was a moment where they kind of became closer. Yeah. They connected in a way where they're not just seeing each other other than just a means to an end for each other. Mm-hmm. You know, at least especially her with him. She really was like, I'm glad we met. And he's resisting a little bit more because that's how he is. But it was just kind of a nice little connecting moment for them.
Yeah, I thought so. I still don't see it as romantic, but
no,
I don't know. I like it. I like that dynamic. And Daryl is capable of having good friendships with people of the opposite sex. So, like, I'm here for it.
It's much easier for him to do that, I think, than to
romance. And Isabel, I think, must have had quite a lonely life after losing her sister. So it makes sense to me that she's feeling attached. Well,
she's been a nun, too.
Yeah. Yeah, hanging out with all the bonsoirs.
Cool. Okay. Talk a little bit about wheeling and dealing with Quinn.
Mm-hmm. Adam Nagaitis, great actor. Glad he's in this. Really enjoy him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the same attachment to him as you guys who've seen him in other things. So to me, just hearing other people's reaction to him made me look at him a little differently. Like, okay, now I'm expecting to be more impressed with this guy than I was in the first episode where he just seemed like a typical douchebag, right?
Yeah.
But here comes off so cool. He's just kind of casually ordering people around and also ignoring people, which they're trying to get his attention. And he just sort of offhandedly will say something and just keep walking or come with me and doesn't wait to see if they're coming because he knows they will kind of thing.
Yeah.
He's good at playing that vibe of the boss.
Mm-hmm.
But after the homing pigeon, Daryl wants a radio. Like, I want a real radio. And
Are homing pigeons a thing in the US as well?
I don't. I'm sure there's people who like play around with them as hobbies, but they're famous more in Europe, I think.
Yeah, I feel like it's quite a British English thing to have homing pigeons, but it's big in Europe as well. So I just wondered if, like, in America, you'd be like, what the fuck are they doing over there? But, like, it is legit a thing. It's just a bit weird for this context.
Yeah, I mean, homing pigeons, I read, have been used for going back to ancient times, I think. But in Paris, in the French Revolution, in World War I and World War II. So, I mean, France, I should say, not Paris.
There you go.
But anyways, so Falou knows people they can trade with, but they need something valuable, which is why they go get the drugs. And Department of Suspension of Disbelief there. And then, he finds the pictures of Quinn that seems like it's her boyfriend. And she says, I was young and very stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they get to the club, and you don't know it's his club, although I was spoiled on that. I read it. They're dealing with some other guys over on the table at the side, and they want to see what they've got to trade, and they may or may not have information. It felt very Cantina from Star Wars dealing with Han Solo to get passage to Alderaan, because they are looking for a ship, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of felt like that. And then Daryl got spooked and wanted to leave, and I didn't quite get it. Like, he looked over at another guy that seemed to be giving signals back and forth, but I was looking, does that guy have a face tattoo? I don't think he did. So I wasn't sure why Daryl just wanted to suddenly call off the whole deal. Did you get that?
Yeah, the atmosphere seemed to change quite quickly.
Yeah.
I think it was just the, it seemed to be just the kind
language.
Of the vibes.
Yeah, the vibes. Bad vibes.
Yeah.
And then Quinn shows up and calms things down. So then I thought, oh, the presence of this guy and this whole environment, I was thinking about Isabel. This could like bring up old habits or ways of thinking or being or feeling for her. You know how it is sometimes when you've healed from something and then you go back into that environment, you may relapse or feel bad about yourself. But she declined the champagne, so she seems like she's staying strong.
She knows who she is.
Yeah. And then Quinn tells her he's going to ask around and see what he can find out about Passage to America, and she says, we have things to trade, and he goes, well, that would be insulting. So you just think, okay, he considers her a friend. He's going to help her. But then I was a little confused about this next part too. She tells Quinn that her sister has the son and he's mad that she didn't tell him he had a son, but she didn't even know
her sister slept
together.
Yeah.
You're mad at her as you're telling her that you cheated on her.
I wonder if he assumed that Lily had told her. Like, that was the old, but I was a bit like, why would she know? Like, but I wondered.
He just seems like a gaslighter to me, like, or a narcissist.
Yeah. And the way they played it, I wondered if she'd started to suspect when she's like, get Laurent away, move him back to where. I did wonder if she, but then she did seem genuinely shocked when she found that out. And I was like,
what are you talking about? She said. She never said. And then he's getting all his vibe changed and he's like up in her business saying he saved her and he uncovers her, the marks on her arm. And apparently he pulled her out of a bathtub bleeding when she cut her wrists. Mm-hmm. But how much of her doing that had to do with him in her life anyway? We don't know.
He seems like he would have been a pretty crap partner.
Yeah. Then he says, you want me to help you. You know the terms. And I'm like, what are the terms? That
she'll give him Laurent.
Okay. Give him Laurent. And why does he want this kid?
I honestly, like,
it was a little vague, right? Yeah, I didn't really. And then Daryl's like, forget this. And I'm like, what is your understanding of this, Daryl? Are you just seeing that his vibe has changed? So you're like, let's get out of here. Or do you know what he wants? Because I'm not sure exactly what he wants. I didn't know if he just wanted her to tell Laurent that he was his father or that he wanted to keep him or what.
No, I think it was access to the kid. But I was a bit like, yeah, sure, let him spend half an hour with him and see how much he likes it. And then if he really does like him after that, we'll discuss it. But this kid's a lot. Like, he's kind of a lot. Like, we love him.
She's like, okay, you can have him. And he's like, oh, no, I just wanted you to tell him that I'm his father. And she's like, nah, you can have him.
You can have him. That's fun. Hope you like Rubik's Cubes. And he's like, what? No, what? Come back. And she's like, I'm off to the nunnery. But yeah, it seemed to be access to and kind of a relationship with his son was my understanding of it anyway.
Which, man, they could have handled that conversation a lot better.
It really was very poorly communicated. Said,
oh, can I meet him versus you fucking owe me.
Yeah, you fucking owe me a child. She's like, what? Huh?
It's like, that wasn't very smooth. And I felt like it could have been written a little better to make a little more sense, but whatever.
Yeah.
So then she's mad at Daryl. That was confusing too. She says, I asked you for help because I needed it. I didn't need a hero. I never did. And it's like, well, you kind of needed a hero.
Mm-hmm. Also, you did fuck all with those zombies, mate. But yes.
Yeah, she's saying, I didn't want you to step in with Quinn, I guess. Mm-hmm. And she's just, I think she really was thrown off balance by him, and she's kind of taking it out on Daryl. She apologizes later and wants Daryl to stay and everything.
It seems like he's been a controlling partner in the past, and it's majorly triggered her seeing him and finding all that out. Mm-hmm.
And so then Caudron shows up at the Demimonde looking for Daryl, and that's when we find out Quinn has an agreement with Janae that he can operate this club. And then later Caudron's guys break in. So I think the implication is that Quinn sold out. He let them in, right? We don't know for sure, but
he definitely tipped them off to where Daryl was, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't like Daryl. No. And then Daryl screams out, get Laurent, meet me back at your place. And then there's that fight with Caudron where he almost kills him, choking him, but then the guys fire, so it disrupts it, and then Daryl falls through the roof. The end. He just kind of skidded there.
Imagine if Daryl died. Oh, wait, no, that will literally never, ever happen. Never.
I mean, I always think about that scene with Beth where she says he's going to be the last man standing.
Yeah, you're like, oh, yeah. Probably. Yep. Yeah.
What else?
If people are looking for Adam Nagaitis where to start, The Terror is great, and Chernobyl also good, but The Terror is the first thing I saw him in a kind of serious role. It was very good.
Mm-hmm. Was that scary?
The Terror. Psychologically, yes.
Yeah.
I'd be really interested to know what you think of it. We were talking about it the other day in relation to Adam Nagaitis, and I was saying, we watched it when we first moved over to Canada and we didn't really have any friends. So it was like very snowy outside and we watched very snowy The Terror. I don't know if I could have watched it during the pandemic because it's quite claustrophobic and lockdowny, but there's some great actors in it. Jared Harris, Kieran Hines. It's really worth watching. Yeah, Isabel and Quinn, interesting dynamics. I think we're going to find out a bit more about that. I didn't really understand why Laurent had such an extreme reaction to what he overheard. Because what he overheard was Isabel saying she doesn't believe in coincidences, Daryl saying make something up, you're good at it, which is a bit of a sick burn. Her saying everything about Laurent's birth was horrible. Him asking her when you're going to tell him about Quinn, and putting forward that he might just be a regular kid who got lucky and lived rather than the Messiah. And that just causes this, like, I hate you both. And then he like runs off, possibly to the Eiffel Tower. I didn't feel like they revealed that much. I mean, maybe the stuff about Quinn.
Yeah. We don't even know what he heard exactly either. But even if we can presume he heard and understood everything, let's say that, then he found out that she'd lied to him about his father and that it was Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but Daryl's saying you should tell him the truth. And then Laurent's like, I hate you both. And if I was Daryl, I'd be like, hey, I said she should tell you the truth.
Like, man, this kid, he whack, like his hormones all over the place. He's like, he's had a day. He's off to the Eiffel Tower to work through some shit. I was sad to see the rooftop community get destroyed. Thought it was really cute. We find out that there's 64 people there. The 64th member is a baby who was born recently. My first thought when I saw it was, that's going to get wrecked. It looked not dissimilar to one of the communities we saw in Dead City, and I kind of liked that because, like, urban setups might be formed in similar ways, even in different countries.
It reminded me a little bit of the community at the stadium. Not, or I don't know if it was a stadium, but in Fear the Walking Dead season 3, that they found this big collective like market or something.
Yes, I remember that.
A little bit.
Yeah. I like the line, we all have a person who waits for us somewhere. I love the idea of carrier pigeons carrying urgent messages. I just thought that was really interesting and funny.
He said, we all have someone who waits for us. And then Daryl looked down, kind of contemplative.
Who do you think he was thinking about?
At first it seemed like he was like, not me, but then I'm like, no, he has people.
It's probably Judith.
He has a lot of people. Yeah, Judith probably. I mean, Carol too.
Freaking child, yeah. I find
maybe RJ, but I don't know if he remembers.
Oh yeah, RJ. He exists. That poor kid, man. He's treating well.
He's the best.
The mythology of Laurent continues to bewilder me a little bit. Like Falou being like, you are the one, and these people giving him gifts and him going to help. I've just written help some sad women, which is probably a bit undercutting poor Sonia's arc of being widowed and being sad about it. And Isabel, I don't know, my hackles went up a bit when Daryl's like, that's a lot to put on a kid. And she says, God chooses our burdens. I'm like,
yeah. I mean, that thing about when Daryl says to her, maybe he's just a normal kid and you need him to be this other thing or whatever he said, right? That's kind of what I was saying about Isabel last week, that how much of this is just her being selfish, like putting all of this on him because she wants it to be her purpose to help the Messiah. And so she's putting this poor kid in dangerous situations, dragging him across a zombie infested country to fulfill this thing that she has inside of her, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, that's my kind of thoughts on the rooftop company. I've been using this app called Notion to do my notes, and it lets you do toggle headings, which I like. And my last bit about the roof, I've written, back on the roof, do rooftop boogaloo, which is, I just thought was funny, so I thought I'd share that with the group. The rooftop chase was kind of cool, lots of jumping and shooting. I'm going to get a bit annoyed if there's another Caudron Daryl fight where they just are stopped from someone being killed by some happenstance of someone shooting at them or whatever. But it was still quite entertaining to watch. And yeah, interesting finish with the roof caving in. Hope Daryl's okay. I'm sure he will be.
Fine.
But he might be very badly injured. So we'll see.
Yeah. So I actually thought about Laurent. The more we watch this, the more I think you're right that the central relationship in this series is Daryl and Isabel. Mm-hmm. And Laurent is a prominent character, but it's not like The Last of Us where it's Joel and Ellie, you know, it's not Daryl and Laurent. It's Daryl and Isabel.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. And I like that. That's one thing that differentiates it from The Last of Us for all you haters out there. but, people are reacting to Laurent as if he's their savior and a religious figure, and starting with Falou, but all throughout the episode, you know, they know of him already. And I thought that was an interesting dynamic, and the way that the actor plays it, I think he's really good. Actually, he's not nervous about it. He doesn't shrink away from it, but he also isn't full of himself about it either, which mm-hmm. actually does make it feel even more like there could be something to it, which I think is what the show wants us to feel, you know, like he has a depth and a stillness to him that feels pretty natural. And you could see people who want to believe that he's the Messiah easily being able to believe that. So that's good. Then when he goes up and hugs this woman, Sonia, whose husband died, and she smiles, and Father Perjean was right. And then when he tells Daryl, "You will not die in Paris." And, but he's also still kid-like, like when he's in the demi-monde and he's transfixed by the singer and he's like trying to talk to her and everything. I think he's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's going on a little journey, which I like.
Yeah. Reading about Laurent's namesake, Saint Laurent, he usually is called Saint Lawrence, I learned, in other cultures. And Lawrence is another name for Larry. So now I think of this kid as Larry.
Larry. Little Larry.
Come on, Larry. All right, let's get into some notes.
Let's get into notes. I enjoyed so Adam Negaitis's accent is northern. It's from Lancashire. He's from Lancashire, and I did like that he greeted the boy with "hello, lad," which is just quite an old-fashioned way of greeting a child. So that really made me laugh. Also, his waistcoat was very extra, and I enjoyed that little costuming decision there. I think my overall thoughts were that Paris as a setting is really fucking cool, and once again, we have wrecked another community just by one of our group being there. And that is something that we should all really think about.
Absolutely. But they won't. They'll just keep doing it.
Just keep turning up.
The Walking Dead, toujours sera The Walking Dead.
Oh, I did also, I thought it was funny that, funny / annoying that all anyone can say about Laurent's mom from the photo is like, "Oh, she was so pretty." And I'm like, yeah. That is her worth. But it's understandable because all they have is an image of her. So, of course, they're going to say that she's really pretty.
Yeah. And when he said that, I thought, oh, that's a nice old fashioned thing to say that I know a lot of people are going to hate. But I thought it was nice.
But even the nightclub singer is like, "She's very beautiful." And I'm like, wait until you find out she fucked her husband. Like,
what if Daryl said, "Oh, she's very pretty." And Laurent's like, "That's problematic."
Yeah, you know he would though. He would. You know who would? Yeah. Alden. Alden would say that. Alden. Yeah. Fucking Alden.
Alden and Laurent. Need to
hear Alden that. And Laurent. Oh my god, Alden is the guardian that Laurent needs. They'd have a great time.
He's gone, unfortunately.
Oh, Alden.
So a few notes. I loved when they're in Isabel's apartment and Daryl's like, "Oh, we should get going." It opens the door and sees zombies right there, closes the door.
Yeah. Ah, crap.
Nope, can't go that way. That was almost like something out of a Naked Gun movie or something.
Literally, yes.
When Falou says that early into the ZA, a military helicopter crashed into the Eiffel Tower and knocked the tip off. And he says, "When the wind blow, the metal groans." And earlier he said, I think that was the noise they heard when he said Paris is crying. And I'm like, that's so very Parisian, that whole poetic metaphor.
Paris is crying. And like Scotland would be like, "I don't know what the fuck that is." Like, it's just noise, man.
So annoying.
Fuck
that. Daryl confirms that the Nest will take Isabel and Laurent the rest of the way where they're headed, which is also called the Nest, because later Laurent asks Sylvie what it's like to be at the Nest. So it seems like the Nest is maybe the name for this whole group, but also their headquarters up north, maybe?
I like that, because if their headquarters is, as we suspect, in Mont-Saint-Michel, it does look kind of like a nest.
Yeah, and it's probably an infested nest.
Yeah. Yeah, gotcha. An infested nest.
In Resident Evil, Nest is an underground lab run by the evil corporation Umbrella that creates zombies and other creatures. So I don't know if that was deliberately foreboding. I got two more. No, I got one more. And that is that I don't think so far that this show has ever used the word walker. And I kind of love that.
Yeah, I think that's right, actually.
Yeah. Because I remember when we first started talking about The Walking Dead, me and Karen, and we wanted to cover it because we loved zombie movies. And so we would refer to them as zombies. It took us a while, I think, to start calling them Zeds. Call them zombies. And somebody wrote in and goes, they're not zombies, they're walkers. And I sent them, or I mentioned a clip from Robert Kirkman where he said he wanted to make the zombie movie that never ended.
Yeah. Outside of the universe, zombies exist. Insane. Inside the universe, they do. I don't know. Or the other way
around. But now we've seen that every group has a different name for them. So then it makes it a little more reasonable not to just have to call them walkers all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're also what, stinkies and whatever else people say.
Stinkies. Buttheads.
Buttheads. Doobs. Dweebs.
Nerds. Wait,
that's Ferris Bueller.
Yeah. Goons. Like, yeah, okay, cool. Geeks.
Right. Like... Goonies. Douchebags.
Amazing.
Infected news.
All right, we're back in this time for some news. One thing I wanted to mention that's not Walking Dead specific, but it is that the Writers Guild of America and major studios and streamers have reached a tentative agreement on a new 3-year contract that promises to end the 146-day writer strike.
Yay! Hopefully they got good terms. And
yeah, they seem pretty happy about it. At least that's what they're saying, you know. We don't know the terms yet because, well, if you haven't been following this, it's like everyone should know. The writers have been on strike, so have the actors, and so they haven't really been able to produce new TV, which over time would mean that we would have to shut down Podcastica because we need TV to be coming out. But because of all this new ways of getting content through streamers instead of cable TV, but the revenue streams have not followed along with that. So writers and can't even make a living doing this anymore. Mm-hmm. So they needed the terms to change. So the two parties have agreed on all deal points, but they still have to draft the final contract and formally agree on it. And the members of the guild have to agree on it and everything. So it's not 100% done, but it seems like it's coming up pretty soon. The WGA said, we can say with great pride that this deal is exceptional with meaningful gains and protections for writers in every sector of the membership.
Excellent.
The actors' strike is still ongoing, but I read there's hope that this will spur agreements on that side of thing. They're facing similar issues about AI and
video games, I think.
Yeah. And residual payments. And so they can hopefully use the writer's agreement as some kind of a template.
Yay.
And then second and last, Drag Race France season 1 winter Paloma played Coco in the show this week. And digitalspy.com had an interview with her. So I thought I'd read some of that.
Yay.
They said, how did you become involved with The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon? She said, one day my phone just rang and it was my agent who told me they want to meet you for The Walking Dead. There was no audition. It was just a meeting. They wanted to see me and hear me speaking English. And I was like, okay, why not? The casting director told me there's no one else in mind for the character. It's for you. I've been waiting for you.
That's so Parisian. It is you. I've been waiting for you.
You are the one. So I passed the test. It was good for them. And the first day of shooting, Norman Reedus just jumped on me, gave me a big hug and was like, oh my God, I'm so happy to meet you. I'm a fan.
Yay.
Later in my dressing room, the scriptwriter told me that Norman asked them to write a part for me. He told me Norman is a very big fan of Drag Race in general, but of France in particular. One of his dreams is to make a show with RuPaul. Norman has a show, you know, on his bike in America, Ride with Norman Reedus. He wants to invite RuPaul onto that. She goes on, Norman is married to Diane Kruger. She's half French, half German, and she lives in France. The night after my first day of shooting, she wrote to me, congratulations on the shooting. Norman was so happy. We have seen every episode of Drag Race. And I was like, oh my God, you are the inspiration for the role of Coco. The costume designer, I had said, I want to be Diane Kruger in Inglourious Basterds. So it was just a perfect match. So that's kind of cool.
Excellent.
So I think maybe if not for Diane Kruger, we might not even have this series, because it really, to me, feels like Norman Reedus just pushing for a lot of what we're seeing, you know. I could be wrong. We should try to get an interview with him. I don't know if we could still do that, but
I wonder if because there's this whole thing about filming in France. I wonder if that's where they're based at the moment, because, you know, she clearly lives there. And yeah, I wonder if that was part of negotiations for this, was it needed to be in France so that he would do it, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, Diane Kruger might be to thank.
And I just think he's creatively involved. He's an executive producer. And here we found out he asked them to write a part for her, you know, for what's her name?
Paloma.
The last part isn't so nice. They said, is there anything you can tease for fans of Drag Race who might not normally watch shows like The Walking Dead? And she said, my fans and Drag Race fans are so happy to see me on the show. The other part is another story, because the Walking Dead fans are not all fans. They're not all LGBTQ+ friendly. They're like, what are you doing on this show? Well, it's the future. And they said, we're sorry to hear you've had to deal with that negative reaction. And she says, no, I just saw a few comments. But when you make a big move like this, when you want to change the world and the world's point of view, there's damage on the road. It's a risk.
Oh, damage on the road. So,
yeah, that's a bummer.
I loved some of the lines that Paloma had as Coco when she said, boys will be boys, and welcoming ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between. It felt like a very organic way to get some representation into the show. So,
yeah.
Fuck the haters, I say.
All right, that is our show, episode 540. Thanks so much, as always, for listening to Le Monde. Next episode, we'll have listener feedback for this episode. Season 1, episode 3, Perry toujours sera Perry.
If you want to write in or leave us a voice message about it, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
While you're there, be sure to check out our other shows. One show coming soon is Loki Season 2. And ooh. Kirk Manley, who he and I did Moon Knight podcast together, he's guested on here. He's the one that does all the Walking Dead tribute posters you may have seen out there. He's a brilliant artist, very good artist, and he's doing the Lokiverse podcast with Alex, who did the From podcast.
Oh, a cool team.
And Sydney, who's amazing. Kind of new, but she did some YouTube live stuff
and The Power with us,
something. Oh yeah, she did The Power on this podcast with Sydney. You guys, yeah. So, yeah, they're all having a great time just digging super deep into Loki and talking all the details and everything. So right now they're covering the first season, you know, I think a few episodes at a time just to get people caught up on it. And then once season 2 comes up, they'll go week by week on that.
Excellent.
Yeah. And last, I'll say this episode was made possible by Patreon supporters like Tank Holthius, who've pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonCabassi. So thank you to Tank. He's helping to support my podcasting, and he gets ad-free episodes of each episode. He's
merci beaucoup, Tank.
All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening. Don't get bit, Sam Brennan.
Rawr, rawr, rawr.